Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Yak Gadget. For all your kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Pelican cases, coolers, and lighting, go to pelican.com. The 153 Bait Company. For all your hard and soft bait needs, go to the 153anglers.com. Now let's get this show started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the final cast. I'm Josh.
I'm Brad.
What's up, Brad?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Not much, man. Tonight we have a regular, Mr. Duke Westcamp Catch. Welcome back to the show, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Good to see you guys.
You too, man. Yeah. It's been a while since we had you on. I want to say it was when
he was the first episode of the year.
Yeah, and it was for the poly boards, and Catch we were X. just talking before we started the show. Me and Duke barely been fishing. Brad goes out like three times a week.
Slacker.
Yeah. He ain't got kids. That's why, man.
Oh yeah.
He don't know.
Keep it in your pants. That's, you'll keep you fishing.
Keep it in your pants. You'll keep fishing.
Yeah. Well, that's the plan.
Brad one time said this to me in the truck, Duke. He was like, "Man, I think I'm just too selfish to have kids."
I tell everybody that.
I made it 36 years before I had kids, and I was definitely in the same boat. I love my kids, but you know they are a. They are a time-consuming parental accessory, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was the same age when we had Zach. So, and then we had Colin 2 years later. So,
I got three more years. Then I'm good.
Yeah,
live it up, brother. Live it up.
But we had Duke come on this week. For those who follow Paddle and Fin well, our man Dustin Nichols is on the catch team. And he has been one of Duke's chosen to be trying out, using, abusing, battling the catch cart. And I thought I'd reach out to Duke and see if he wanted to come on and talk about it. So, Duke, how long was that in the making? I think you've been talking about it for a while, kind of behind the scenes, right?
I can confidently say that no kayak cart has been as thoroughly tested as that. I actually had the original prototype. I had at the 2018 KBF National Championship, and it came about because of frustration. I do a lot of strip mine fishing, which, you know, sometimes if you're lucky, you've got like an ATV track, and then sometimes you're just beating brush, and it gets kind of gnarly. And when you get into that situation, it only takes once or twice for your cart to fail, and then you drag a big heavy kayak back through the grass and brush, and you're like, I'm never doing that again. So it started just as something that I built for myself, and never – I didn't really think it was a consumer product, because I just didn't think it was a consumer product. There were so many carts that were available, and I just kind of thought that, you know, my fishing experience was kind of a little different because I live in this – dump called Illinois, and you know, if we want to get into some good water, a lot of times, you know, it just necessitates getting off the beaten path. But you know, as I you know, 2018, I wasn't nearly as involved in the industry. That was kind of right when we came in and people became aware of Catch and they started approving our bump boards. And, but as I met more people, I found that, you know, there were definitely more individuals like me that were not really, you know, going to the popular lakes and going to the boat ramp and just going over concrete. And so we started right away in 2019, testing them and, you know, it's taken a while. Everything with COVID makes everything, you know, it really should have been released in the fall of 2020 or even in January of 2020, but, few last minute changes and, you know, and just the supply line issues even for someone who's, you know, an American made, product like us is it's still just hell, really. I feel for any of my fellow entrepreneurs running small and, you know, medium-sized businesses, it's just a tough road right now.
Yeah,
it's tough to get a lot of stuff, man. We just at my work, forklift parts, it'd be simple like a chain, you know, or a little bolt, and it's like it's out of commission for 2 weeks and you're like, really?
Oh yeah.
Like we're the same
parts, so
yeah, we're the same way at our job. I mean, we've been waiting on cabinets for jobs for 3 months and trusses for 9 weeks and just stupid stuff like that.
Oh, builders have been getting crushed. You know, I got quite a few friends locally that are contractors, and yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same story, you know. And then you wait, you know, you're waiting 12, 16 weeks sometimes on like plumbing fixtures and whatnot, and then the manufacturers have adjusted their prices before they ship, and so now you're dealing with price increases, and yeah, it's not a fun time to be a small business owner.
Is the price of lumber still really high?
No, it went down.
It went back down.
Yeah, it got up to for like a half inch of plywood or OSB, it was like $45 or something. Now it's back down to 12.
Okay, well that's good.
That was insane for a while. It was
Dude, people were still building. That was that thing that blew me away. I was like, holy crap. We got all these people wanting work and paying for all this material. It was crazy.
Yeah, well, with the home prices the way they are right now, I mean, most people are pretty happy with the investment as long as they get out before this bubble bursts.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's the problem. Like,
yeah, I have a feeling there's darker days around the corner for the housing market for certain.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, probably. It's kind of what happened last time, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's just the playbook from 2008, you know?
Yep. And you got these banks and stuff that are like purposely buying up houses as well. Like, that's what's real sketchy. So, but dude, I'm glad to see what you guys made. Dustin has been raving about it. He makes at least a post a week, if you know, or a couple of them here and there every month, and I'm like, he seems to be really really keen on it and really impressed by it, because I know he's the kind of guy he was a good one of your good choices for, you know, really testing it out. That guy gets out a lot.
Yeah.
He's in that saltwater environment as well.
That was the big thing. The two you hit on both of them, you know. There's only so many guys on the team that really do this full time or are on the water almost every day. Dustin, you know, falls into that category. Kai Vang was the other guy that tested in saltwater. But those were our two saltwater guys. And then locally, Dave Brook and myself tested around here. And then actually Jason DeGrant does. I don't know if you guys know him. He's the owner of Never Lost Tethers.
Okay. Yeah.
But he's been testing ours. He does a lot of like river, like off the beaten path river stuff in Missouri. Mm-hmm. So kind of along the same lines, you know, it was really important. You know, everyone that was on the testing team got one instruction for me. It was just try to break it. You know, don't throw it off your roof, but, you know, like go out and use it and abuse it and try to break it. And the saltwater guys, I told them, don't rinse it. I don't want you, you know, doing freshwater rinse. Like, we want to see how the wheels hold up, how all the fittings hold up. And you know, yeah, Dustin was real key to that, and he seems to be, you know, real happy with the product. So
let's kind of jump around a little bit and talk about what was on the market and
what aspects you were kind of trying to tackle. I mean, we know of the popular ones out there, like the Sea Tug, the Wilderness Cart, Boondocks. What else is there?
The Suspends one always caught my eye.
Yeah, I've seen it, but I've never really seen too many people who are using it. I used a cheap, Field and Stream one. That lasted maybe two trips, and I threw it in the trash.
Malone makes a couple models.
Yeah, Malone does. So I have a Sea Tug now. Overall, I can't complain too much about it. I've only had one break on it, and it was actually my fault where I had it backwards, and I was going over a road, actually, because it was like a spot that I was fishing, and you park in a parking gravel lot, and you go over, and you have to cross the road, and it's a raised road, so it's kind of got an uphill in concrete. So as you transition that, it's kind of a significant bump. And the kickstand caught that bump. And because I had it backwards, it wasn't where it would kick up. So it just snapped it and broke it. That was one thing I've always liked about the Sea Tug was that you can buy replacement parts for it. So if you do break something, it's an easy fix. I want to say that it's overpriced. The reason I say that, initially, when you would look at it, you would say I could justify it at first, maybe if it wasn't that popular. But the fact that it became so popular that it's not like they made this mold, you know what I mean? And they're not producing a lot, like how kayak molds are, how expensive those things are make and that sort of thing. So I was kind of like, after a while, I'm like, this is probably the most popular cart out there. Out of all of them. So, but I mean, overall, I've been satisfied with it. Do I think there was a lot of stuff lacking? Yes, like durability wise. But like I said, they did kind of make it the ability to be able to replace it. But even at that, you're still kind of looking at the cost of it and still having to replace it. And I don't know. It's still a little, price heavy for me for being plastic. But it is using a strap system, and although it works well, if you're on flat ground or whatever, I've walked with it for, a quarter of a mile and not had any issues, but anytime you start to hit bumps and stuff like that, because it uses a strap, the cart wants to twist a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's what was, kind of the issue that I had with my first cart. Sorry, guys. I've been battling a cold all week, so I keep losing my voice. My first cart was a cheap cart. It's kind of that foldable metal tubing one.
Yeah.
And that thing had two straps, and that was the worst thing I've ever used. Like, I went fishing one time, and I tried to walk, on a pathway from the river and dumped my kayak, 16 times because it would twist. I couldn't ever get it tight enough. The straps would come loose. Just nothing about it worked right. The Sea Tug holds up better. It's not the best, but it does hold up. It does move a little bit. If I mess it up a little bit, if I hit something a little too gnarly, it's definitely going to probably twist off.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's little things, little bumps, not too shabby. Overall, that's just been my experience. Now, mind you, I've not been using an extremely heavy kayak, like a Hobie PA 14 or 12 or a Jackson Big Rig. This was using the Coosa HD and or the Kilroy HD. So they're my river boats. They are a little on the heavier side, not totally light, but I think that's one reason why they've stood up, or that cart has stood up, because I'm not carrying electronics, the batteries, all the really extremely heavy stuff on it. So, I mean, I know a lot of people are like, oh, my Big Rig's fine on it. And I'm always been like, my 90 pound Kilroy, it's all right on it, but dude, it's not foolproof,
what I would say about like most of the existing market is, if you're going over like a gravel parking lot or a paved parking lot, like if you're just going from the parking spot to the ramp or to the beach, you know, whatever the beach or whatever wherever you're launching from. But if you have a relatively smooth surface, almost any cart will do the trick. Like you said, it's the aggravating stuff when you're kind of walking on the side of a hill and the kayak always wants to slip off. Mm-hmm. Or when you go over rough terrain and you break them. That's where, you know, and that's kind of where we've positioned ourselves is, you know, this is, you know, and I still got to talk it over with the legal team. But it looks like it looks like we'll probably be offering a lifetime warranty on everything except wheels. And for that exact reason, like we want the consumer to have like the ultimate confidence that it's, because I mean, realistically, the cart's not going to fail unless you do something really stupid. We put in, when we decided in 2019 to go ahead and turn it into a production part or a production product, we built a prototype, and we actually, at the time, the lot that's just sitting right out over here, in front of the building, was vacant, and we know the developer, and they had it was still kind of rough back there. And I've got a John Deere Gator, and I had one of my buddies was out of work. And so I said, well, I'm like, it's shitty work, but I'm like, you want to drive around at 3 miles per hour all day and drag a cart loaded. So we took my old, Wilderness Systems Commander, and we loaded it up with, you know, I think it was like about 100 pounds of like PVC plastic waste, and put it on the cart and literally dragged it for 3.5 weeks and put, I think it was like 390 something miles, just short of 400 total miles. I managed to break the handle off the kayak several times. we deformed the hull from all the weight sitting in it. There was all sorts of stuff that happened to the kayak, because it was overloaded and you know, kind of awkward, but we couldn't manage to break anything on the cart. And that was kind of the first goal was just, you know, the dependability of it, the durability of it had to be of catch quality. You know, I mean,
yeah,
you guys know how we got into the bump board business, and we right. basically only got in there because hog troughs broke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was really the big selling point. And so it needed to be overbuilt, and it's sufficiently overbuilt.
I think that's kind of cool, though. I don't see other companies doing that kind of R&D work. You know what I mean? Well, not R&D, testing on the nobody else is carrying or dragging a cart 400 miles.
That's no, cool. No. And that's why we did it, just because, you know, it's gonna carry a premium price tag, like a lot of the stuff that Ketch has. Mm-hmm. That we offer. And you know, my thoughts are just, you know, I put myself in the shoes of the consumer, which is, I don't want to spend a lot of money on something and have it fail. And as the builder of it, like, I don't want people to be messaging me like, well, I broke this on my cart, what can I do? No, it's just not going to break. That was the whole game. So, you know, we're a little bit, we're heavier than a lot of the stuff on the market, but that's kind of to be expected with the aluminum construction versus a lot of the plastic, a lot of the tubular ones. I mean, those are ones of the pits, you know.
Yeah.
They just don't, none of them seem to fit your kayak quite right at all. You know, they twist off, they fall over on the trail. You know, the wheels are just, well, horseshit. They fail. So, you know, that was really the first benchmark. And then as we started along the design, you know, the design kind of, you know, the design process, we ended up, you know, there were a few other things where we thought, you know, there could be some differentiating factors, like, ease of putting it on and off the cart. So I can actually not fully loaded because I'm a fat ass and I'm out of shape now, but but I can actually one-handed an unloaded PA-14. I can put it on the cart with one hand. So
that's cool. This
isn't like a deal where, cause how many times have you done this? You got your cart and you're like, ask your buddy at the ramp, like, hey man, can you hold the back up so I can
so I could slide it into the right spot. And like you're reconnoitering the cart just to make sure, you know, you get the best first, you know, strap on it so that it doesn't fall off. And most of the time it doesn't really matter anyhow, because as soon as you get off road with it, you end up restrapping or it falls off. So there were other design elements that kind of came down the road, but most of it was really about that durability. And I had broken one that was, I think it was a Seattle Sports, which is kind of like your typical tubular, you know, BS cart. And then I broke a Sea Tug as well. And then Dave Brook, who's a good friend of mine that I fish with all the time, I've personally watched him break 3 Sea Tugs in strip mines. Every time it's awful. And fortunately, the last time I had my cart and we actually stacked both of them on top of one another and strapped them in and took turns carrying it back, because it's a really nice cart. But when you put like 300 pounds of kayak, it's not a whole lot of fun.
I've never actually owned a cart myself, and you hit a couple of the reasons why. I mean, talking about some of the other brands out there, I look at some of the designs, I'm like, that's not going to work for me. I don't know, man. I've kind of been waiting and waiting for like that perfect cart.
Are you doing mostly river stuff, right, Brad?
Yeah.
This will fit your lifestyle, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's that. Brad, do you want to bring up a picture of it too for people who are actually watching?
I was about to do that
because I had some questions in regards to, you know, how you put it underneath the kayak and that sort of thing. Because I mean, you've touched on it. We've talked about that it's made out of aluminum. That, like you said, it's going to have a premium price tag. I saw you post about this somewhere recently. I'm not 100% sure. It might have been you, though. And I think we were talking – somebody was asking something, and we talked about – you were maybe talking about Sims waders.
Okay.
Am I right about that?
Yeah, I only use Sims. I've had enough shitty waders, too, that I –
Right. So I'm the same way, man. Like, it only took me one season, right? One season, I bought Field & Stream waders and boots, and they didn't even last through the season. And from then on, I was like, all right, you know what? I'm gonna listen to these people, what they're talking about. And I became – at that point after that, I became – buy once, you know what I mean, and pay the extra.
For sure.
From then on, I've had the same pair of G3 boots from Sims for the past 5 years, and they're still going good. I need to replace the laces, but that's expected, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just because of probably my shitty untying ability. You know what I mean? I do it real fast. And then also, I tend to store my boots improperly. You know, they say to get a boot dryer for those and don't store them in a hot garage and that kind of thing. So, but the boots, they've held up, man. They're doing great. And from then on, I kind of looked at it like, all right, there's certain things you can skimp on. But then there's things that you can realize that the amount of money that I'm paying, if I was to pay this every year, in 3 years, I would have bought.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
you know, the Sims waiters, for example, you know what I mean? And they'd probably last longer, you know?
Yeah.
I know that, some guys are rocking those things for, you know, 7 to 10 years, you know?
My last set of Sims waiters, I used for 12 years. And I didn't retire them. You know, we actually did a video shoot in 2018, in Southern Wyoming, Northern Colorado. And I had Vasily, our videographer, with me, and he obviously didn't have a set of waiters. So he got the hand-me-down Duke waiters so I could get some new Sims stuff. But I had no issues with the old stuff, to be honest with you. And you know, it was kind of the same thing. I bought and Orvis is you know, still a reputable brand, but I had a couple set of Orvis, and, you know, they leaked, and the boots didn't quite fit right. And when everything got, the boots got wet and all packed out, you know, you were sloshing around in them, which in running water on rocks and stuff was, you know, not ideal. And finally, you know, I had a bunch of buddies that guided, and they're just like, dude, you're stupid. Just buy Sims and just forget about it. Even if you buy the cheapest Sims stuff, buy the Sims stuff, because first of all, if you get into G3 or anything higher, the waders are American made.
Yeah.
Which obviously, you know, to me is a huge marketing point, but they're just built well, and they're built for guys that use them every day. It's not built for the casual user. And to your point, you know, if you go out and do river fishing, you know, like 4 times a year, yeah, don't go out and spend $500 on a set of waders. It's a waste of money. But if you're going to spend 20 or 30 days a year doing it, you're going to beat them up. And if you buy, you know, you buy that like entry level product, it's not going to hold up. It's not meant to hold up. It's meant for that casual guy who just wants who doesn't want to stick his feet in some rental waders and rental boots, you know.
Right.
You know, so there's a place for all of it. But, you know, I think generally speaking for this audience and for you guys, you know, you're pretty hardcore fishermen. So, you know, you're not really going to often go wrong, you know, with a premium product. Because, again, you just don't break it. You won't, you know, you're not going to end up replacing it all the time. And I'm like a nostalgic dude, too. I just get attached to stuff. You know, I don't like to. You know, I still have my old 2012 PAs that I refuse to sell because I'm just kind of attached to them. You know, I've spent a lot of time on those boats, and they're all beaten up, but they're all beaten up by me. And, you know, I just kind of hang on to them. And you know, I like a product that's going to last a lifetime as opposed to something that's kind of like a disposable, for a better term.
It's true. It's in a sense, they make it like that on purpose because they want you to keep having to buy it. And there's nothing in a sense wrong with that. It's just, you know, like, how serious are you? And, you know, with your cart, when I saw it, I was like, when I first saw the first picture of it, I was like, that's definitely Duke right there, man. That thing's a tank. Like, I was like, I mean, looking at it right now, it's impressive. So I want to know. You were talking about how easy it is to get up underneath the kayak, unload it, right?
Yeah.
So go through what you would do to put this thing, you know, put your boat on it.
Okay. So the, as you can see on the near side to us, that's the telescoping kickstand. So that kickstand actually slides all the way up into the tube for storage. So you're going to telescope the kickstand out and prop it up just like that. And you're going to kind of, you're going to get right next to your, you know, it's different on every boat. Your ideal, you know, weight balance point, you know, if you've done enough dragging a kayak on a cart, you realize if you put it too far to the stern, it's real heavy. And if you put it too far forward, you end up kind of have to pull, but push down at the same time. So there's a little experimentation that goes around, you know, what's the correct balance point when your kayak's all rigged up and you want to drag it out to the water. But you kind of put it right next to your balance point, and you point that kickstand side to the opposite side of the bow, and you basically just lift. And if you've got the bunk set up correctly, when you set it down, it'll center itself, and those pads, which are, I thought that was so cool because those are like, that's like the last guy in America that still makes the old school BMX pad.
Yeah.
Awesome,
yeah.
we grew up in the 80s and 90s, so that's like it's probably not cool to the younger paddle and fin listeners, but it's cool for us old folks.
Dude, I was sitting there looking at those, and I was like, "What do those remind me of?"
they're like a pretty like rough canvas material, so.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the tendency to want to squirt out on you. You know, like a lot of the carts, when you go set the cart down, you know, it's got this tendency to want to just kind of squirt its way out of the back of the kayak, and you always end up with too much weight in the front, and you kind of end up working too hard to get to the water.
Yeah.
So I should have sent you guys some videos. I have some really crappy, shot videos of me loading and unloading the boat, but it's really simple, and a lot of the magic comes with the bunks are adjustable, so that whole T-track system you see, that's a square extrusion profile, and it's got T slots on every side, but even though we had designed this and we'd been testing it since way before the Wilderness Systems cart came out, a lot of people would kind of equate it to like what Wilderness Systems did, but the Wilderness Systems cart only really allows you to adjust in one axis. You can make it wider, you can make it narrower. Well, on this cart, you can actually cant the, you can cant it in, yeah, you can pull it in and pull it out. And so, you know, most of your kayaks like Hobie, Jax, I mean, almost all of them, even the Bonafides, it's just done a little differently, but they have the outside stabilizers, right?
Yeah.
And so if you kind of position those pads right at the where the outside stabilizer comes into kind of the keel area, it basically centers itself. And for, you know, a path like that, like it's sitting on those rocks, absolutely no strap required. Just throw it up there and go. And you won't have to touch it. For what we do in the strip mines, I still always throw a ratchet strap around it just because you know, we're running into big rocks, and sometimes you're pulling it over like 4 to 6 inch like logs and stuff, and you know, uneven terrain, and it's easier to throw a strap around around it than, but you know, as far as like, you know, going over just like some flat grass or pavement or gravel or even like a little bit of rougher gravel like in the picture, no problem, no strap required. And a lot of that comes from the adjustability, and also with that adjustability, if you set it up right, at least on a, you know, I've done a lot of testing on a Hobie. I've tested it on, I've got a Crescent ultralight and a Crescent crew. On any of those boats, once you set the bunks up, if you find the balance point right and you set the bunks up, because the bunks aren't just linear, they're not just, you know, parallel straight ahead, the kayak always wants to sit in the right place. So the loading it on and off ends up being, you know, really, really simple, which is, you know, saves you a lot of headaches at the ramp or at the parking lot or on the other end when you're loading it up in the brush.
Yeah. That was one issue that I always had with the C-Tug, because you kind of had to angle it towards, you know, the front of your boat and hope that the angle's right. And then, you know, you're trying to line up to that balance point, right? And mine's on my kayaks has been kind of just behind the seat somewhat.
Yeah.
But you pick it up and you realize, oh man, like I'm either way too far over or not enough. And then you're setting it down and the boat's twisting and you're sitting there trying to push the cart and adjust it. And it doesn't want to push very well. And you've got the nice thing about the C-Tug is it's the platform it's sitting on, you know, the little paddle things. Sorry guys. They do move, but it doesn't really necessarily help center the kayak at all. You know, it kind of finds a gripping point, which was nice, but it doesn't assist in any way of helping it the cart be centered by any means, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's been times where I've gotten pissed and I look back and I'm laughing cuz I can see the carts over to the left more, or over to the right, and I'm like,
that drives me
I'm nuts. Walking with it at an angle, but it's going straight. Like,
yeah, or it's, you know, it's squirting out and back, and then, you know, that's like the constantly the cart gets heavier and heavier as you go, you know, because it starts squirting out the back, and so you're supporting more of the front of the kayak. As you go.
I've had it to where I'm pulling the kayak and the cart just stops and it just goes smack hits the ground.
Yeah.
That drives
me nuts. I've done that. It kayak comes off completely and you're laughing because the strap is still on. it's pulled all your gear to the back too.
Or it just dumps everything in the middle of the trail and then you're just firing off four letter words and
My first card was a catch card. Yeah, one of my first carts was that cheap kind, the tubular one. And, I was like, I'm going to go on this trip. I'm going to go by myself. I'm going to go down the river. I'm going to hike my ass out of there with my cart and my kayak. And I'm going to walk all the way back on the bike trail. It took me 2.5 hours to walk basically like a quarter mile, dude, with that thing. Because I dumped it so many times in the woods. I would get pissed and just sit down for 15 minutes contemplating life. Why am I out here? This is so stupid.
Those tubular, and I think the problem with a lot of those tubular carts is just they were designed at a time when there weren't really heavy sit on top kayaks.
Yeah, so small and narrow.
Yeah, if you go throw like a little 10-foot sit inside, like a Pelican or something, or something that's like 40, 50 pounds on there, I'm sure they work just fine, even off road. But it's just, how many kayak anglers do you know that can limit themselves to 40 or 50 pounds? I mean, exactly. Maybe if you've got one of those Eric Jackson numbers that's like 36 pounds or whatever, maybe you can manage to get out there with only 50 pounds if you go real light on the gear. But I think the typical load for most guys is, 100 to 120 pounds. And I honestly think that's being conservative, because there's a lot of guys with 130 pound Hobie PA 14s and, they're not just dragging the kayak out there. Or same thing with a big rig. I think a big rig's about 125 or 130 pounds too. And that's just the weight. That's not with a pedal drive. That's not with your milk crate or your rods and your tackle, or, if you're hiking out, you're bringing, cold beers and some food and whatnot, so it's I think 100 to 120 pounds is probably on the conservative side, but I just don't think many of the carts were designed with that type of load in mind, or at least that type of load and that type of usage, like off-road type usage.
So let's talk about what kind of mounting are you using, bolts or whatever are you using to be making the bunks adjustable like that?
In 100% truth, this is the first product that isn't uncompromisingly American made. We actually have designs to be able to use a not off the shelf extrusion, which looks very similar to that. But because of the trouble it is to get vendors to extrude product for us right now, we were forced to go with it's a company called MyTech, I've been using their extrusion systems for 20 years to build automation systems. We've used them for machine bases and guarding packages and all sorts of stuff. And it's got a really, really neat connector system. I wish I had one sitting here right now because I'd show you, but it's basically a cammed screw. You have to machine the square extrusion, but when you tighten, there's like a boss that sits out of the end and it fits into the T slot in the rest of the T slot on the crossbars. Mm-hmm. And the connector actually has a higher breaking strength than the aluminum. So the connection is just as strong as a solid piece of aluminum. It's a neat system, and we actually have a system all designed, and I'm hoping that by 2023 that we'll be completely away from the MyTech product. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It's a great product. It's not Chinese made. It's German. Just to be clear, we didn't go to China on that shit.
well, if you did, it would have broken already.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a great product, and that's what gives it, as opposed to I think most people are familiar with the Wilderness Systems cart, and the biggest difference is the Wilderness Systems cart has a solid axle cross, and so those bunks just adjust narrower or farther away, and as you can see, ours are independently on the two crossbars, so It allows you probably like 15 degrees, 10 to 15 degrees of toe in or toe out to match the contour of the kayak. And that to me is the big difference. And in addition, the unforeseen benefit of doing it like that, because the truth is we designed it like that specifically for that level of adjustability. We knew we didn't want to just be all, you know, altering it on one axis. We wanted to be able to like change the toe in and toe out. But one of the unintended benefits of it was that we got rid of that axle, that axle design. And so we've got about a foot of clearance, ground clearance, which you don't get on any of the other carts. You've got 3, 4, 5 inches of ground clearance. And, you know, on the upside, when you do get those ATV tracks or those side-by-side tracks where you can, you know, you can drag your kayak instead of just beating the brush. The crappy part, if you have an axle, is that you're always constantly hanging up, with the wheels sitting on either side. So, it gives you extra ground clearance, but that design was kind of really, based in the fitment to the hull of the kayak. But, it's a Boss system. So if you see the little short piece that holds the bunk tube, on the inside of that, it's a 5 millimeter Allen key or Allen key, and and that's what loosens and tightens it. And you know, I think it's got like a 14,000 pound breaking strength. They've built windmills in the Netherlands out of this stuff, so it's pretty robust. It's also pretty expensive too, which is not the main reason why we're building our own, but it's an expensive system, and it wasn't necessarily the best way to go about doing this, but it was a matter of, you know, we have this new product and we've been sitting on it for like 2 years, and I just got sick of it. And I was like, you know, damn the torpedoes, we're just going to do it. And, you know, it's going to get better and cheaper as we go. But I think there's just enough people at this point that want to get into a good cart that it just made much sense to keep shelving it, to just wait and wait and wait.
Yeah.
I want to know how quick is it to take it all apart? Like if somebody wanted to store it inside of their hull or something of their kayak.
Ah, thank you for that question. That's perfect. So it doesn't take much time at all, but you don't have to disassemble it because the footprint. So like, let's call the footprint, you know, if you draw a box between the arches that the wheels are hanging on and the two crossbars, well, that size was not by accident. That was designed like that. So it accommodates Yak Gadgets. It accommodates Yak Gadget, one of the wonderful sponsors of this show. It accommodates the Yak Attack Black Pack, and it accommodates a Hobie product. But it will also accommodate our new crate system, which will be hopefully a mid-year release. Hopefully a mid-year release this year. We're having the same extrusion problems, but we actually have a modular crate system. So you can order a standard model, which is going to be really comparable in price. Actually, almost the dead same as those competitors in that 140-150 range. Yeah. But you can actually order your cart. You'll be able to order your crate to size. So you can specify, I want it this tall, this wide,
that's awesome,
this many rod holders, and we'll build it totally custom for you. And it will, and as long as you don't exceed the dimensions, it'll fit right in there. So the long answer to your very simple question is just that you put the kickstand back into place, you flip it over and put it in your tank well, and then you just set your milk crate right inside of it.
Wow. I gotcha. That's kind of cool.
That was not a solution that I had come up with previous to this year. When we go to the Mazonia strip mines, we just leave our carts next to the water. We're not there's not a river system. So there's a lot of interconnected lakes. So you'll cover a lot of ground, but a lot of the portages after that are really short. It's like maybe you're crossing 15 feet of grass to get to the next lake. We never bring them with. So we just kind of, you know, we'll hike out about a mile or, you know, a half mile to like a mile and a half. And then we were just leaving our carts in the brush. So I never thought about it. And Some of the testers were like, well, I'm nervous about leaving this thing out, you know, out next to the water. And I was like, well, you didn't buy it, so who cares? Leave it out there. No, yeah, I've never had anyone steal one of mine.
Yeah.
But you know, I guess that is more of a concern, and it's especially a concern if you want to do multiple portages, or if you're doing rivers, you're not going to end up in the same spot you started from. So,
right,
you know, having it come with was kind of an afterthought, but we were working on a cart project, and I just happened to have a black pack sitting in here, and we flipped the cart over, and I was like, well, what if we just adjusted this, this, and this, and you can drop this thing right in here. And it just kind of ended up working. It ended up working perfect. And you can you can put 10 rod holders on a black pack, and it still fits in there. You just gotta, in the center ones that are above the wheels, it's just a spinning reel maybe hangs a little low. So you got to either turn it in, but you know, who's carrying 8 egg beaters with them? You know, I mean,
Brad.
Me? No. Oh,
I'm just kidding, dude.
I don't even own 8 of them, man. That's cool. That's cool though, man. I like that.
Yeah, it was.
All right, guys.
It wasn't it wasn't necessarily on one of the design priorities, you know, coming out, but it was it kind of became something that we ended up gearing it towards as we ramped up into production. So, and for once, we might actually have this one out on time. We're planning on going on sale on January 1st, and I have almost everything except the anodized arches back in the shop. So, fingers crossed, you know, if nothing goofy happens, this will be available on New Year's Day.
Heck yeah. Let's talk wheels. That's always important because we've seen 1,000 different types of wheels in the kayak cart market. Some people swear by one version. Some people like another version. What did you find worked best that you wanted to put on the catch cart?
We got out of the realm of what are typically considered, what's something called a tread cap wheel, which is what you find on most of the kayak carts, which is basically a plastic hub with a small, you know, like a small rubber or like softer plastic outside that you press onto the wheel. Mm-hmm. First of all, most of them didn't come with decent bearings. So it was just, it's just like a plastic on spindle kind of design, which eventually over time just fails. And so we actually started, this is a product that we have actually a designed wheel. We just haven't found anybody who's willing to make it for us right now, or not in a timely fashion at this point, but we had an American made supplier. This part is Chinese. But it's actually a dolly wheel. It's meant to replace tires for like a shop dolly, you know, mm-hmm. Like a shop hand cart. So each one of them's got a 450 or 500 pound capacity. So it was kind of following the theme of overbuilt. They are about 4 pounds a piece. So there's about 8 pounds of weight built into the wheels, but that all boiled down to, I'd gladly compromise with weight versus I'd compromise with heavier weight to get better durability, and over the long haul, these were the wheels that held up the best. They do currently have an unsealed bearing on them. The production wheels, which we hope to have by 2023, will actually be a full sealed bearing, similar to like what you'd see in like rollerblades. So like an ABAC rated sealed stainless bearing. The one in there right now is it's certainly better than nothing, but it still leaves a little bit to be desired. It rolls really nice. I just for my money, at least for the guys in saltwater, I the sealed bearing makes a lot more sense to for sand and salt. I honestly think the salt is probably the bigger issue, but they'll all come pre-packed from the factory with grease, and it's pretty easy to pack them. And truthfully, unless you're
unless you're constantly submerging it, I mean, you can go a couple years probably without repacking the bearing.
Yeah. Brad, you got anything to add?
No, man. I'm not real big. Like, I've never really used a cart, so I don't really, know what to expect. But
are you going to put the catch twist on it? Is it going to be in different colors? Anything crazy like
that? It'll be in any color you want as long as that color's black. for the time
it's
being,
sharp, man. I'm digging it, man. I know the design to a lot of people are going to be like, oh, it's a wilderness cart, But I know that you've been working on this thing for quite some time because we've had you on the show multiple times and you've always kind of hinted at, like watch for a cart, watch for a cart, watch for a cart, And so I know you've been at this for, a solid 3 years and I'm excited to see it. Like I said, Dustin has done nothing but rave about it, man. He loves that thing. And, like we were talking about before, that guy fishes, quite a bit and he's a saltwater guy. So he's going to put it through the paces and he's not said any, anything negative about the cart. I've digged this telescoping rod idea because that's, the kickstand thing with the C-Tug. It's a great idea, but like I said, it'd be real easy to have that thing flip backwards and you're not even really kind of thinking about it. And I've broken one off, And dude, I mean, the BMX pads.
Yeah, oh, that's cool, man.
It's badass, dude. When I saw it, I was like, is that foam? You know what I mean? And you got like the catch, logo on it. And I'm like, I really hope those are BMX pads. Like, I was really excited to be like, if they are. Yeah. And when you said that they were, I was like, hot damn, it is.
You have no idea how hard that was to find. We found a little company in California and they kind of, their whole business is really just building replacement pads. Cause the pads kind of fell out of, favor with the BMX crew, crowd in the 90s. It was kind of us that grew up in the 80s, late 80s. That's where, your bike actually came with the pads on it.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot of people that actually make them anymore. And we found this little company out of California, that makes custom pads. And that was, that was kind of my, there were obvious cheaper solutions to this problem, but we talked to them and they sent us some different prototypes and, the truth was the biggest benefit of the whole thing, is the coarseness of, they use a really heavy, this really heavy, nasty canvas material, And it gives just enough friction on the bottom of the kayak that you don't, like I said, paved roads, gravel, even rougher rock, you just won't pull it off. So it became a great solution, if not the cheapest solution, maybe the coolest.
When you put the kayak on those, do they twist? Do they turn? So as it tries to line itself up, does the padding itself turn? Cause I would think that would be almost beneficial. You know what I mean? It would allow it to kind of move into place.
It will. So it's like a foam. There's a foam inner that goes over the tube. And then it's just like the old BMX pads where there's a section of Velcro around the back. So if you want it to rotate a little bit, you can leave it a little looser.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll move around a little bit. That one, I can tell Dustin staged that one for the shot, made sure the catch logos were facing out and stuff. They'll get a little beaten up, but it was a great solution. And then as far as the colors, the only reason we're not, doing that whole, the whole color thing and allowing, a little more customization or, a little more options for the anglers is just with everything, all the lead times on product right now, doing it in one color, it gives us more control over, over the product line. We're forecasting 1,200 units. So there'll be about 100 units available every month, which I think is probably a little too conservative. But it, like I said, we've had all sorts of sourcing issues. And so we just kind of, we've come to grips with the fact that we probably won't meet demand year one, but once we prove it out, and especially once these supply line issues get a little ironed out, like specifically just being able to get anodizing on time. You know, we went from, you know, I used to be able to send stuff out on Monday and get it back by Friday, to anodizing. And now, you know, I'm running 8 to 12 weeks in a best case scenario, 12 to 20 weeks, in a worst case scenario. And, you know, 20 weeks, I mean, damn, that's like almost a half a year.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it really is a lot. If you say it like 20 weeks, you're like, oh, it's not that long. And, you know, it's like 5 months.
Yeah, but when you got a product that, you know, is, it's got, you know, I think it's had a good amount of hype around it. I've been excited to hear about it. So, you know, that you guys did it and it came out, and I'm super impressed with it. You know, I knew you would do something like this. I didn't think it'd be half-assed by any means. You don't half-ass anything. So you build it to last, and that's one thing that Ketch has been known for from day one. And so I commend you guys on that. It's awesome.
And, appreciate it.
I can't wait to get one. I'm excited.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. MidwayUSA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Yeah, speaking of, what's the price?
Yeah, that's a secret still.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you, it'll be more expensive than the Wilderness cart for sure. We're not quite dialed in on that. You know, it might be as much as like $399.99, which I know is not the answer that most people want to hear. But again, that comes with, you know, that ends up being a lifetime warranty on everything except the wheels. So. It's really geared towards
just ask Dave Brooke, right? How many just ask tugs, Dave, how ask many sea tugs it paid for itself, right?
He I've seen him break 3 sea tugs, and he's broken several other carts before we knew each other, because he's been fishing that area for like 15 years. So he's got a wasteland of broken carts, and the one that he had that was running was like, it was like a cheap one that was like a mutant, where he'd taken a couple wheels off of one that he liked and, you know, stolen some straps and, like, you know, it was all duct tape but he made it work. But yeah, he started using this, at the end of last season, and yeah, he's obviously real happy with it. And he was the big driving force behind the testing team. You know, Dustin and Kai did the salt water, but as far as, you know, durability and really putting it through its paces, a lot of that was Dave. And historically I would have been there, and I was until about June. And then, you know, my fishing kind of fell off the face of the earth, you know, come July. And so I didn't get many, I haven't, to be honest, as it sits right now in production version, I've actually only just, I've only tested just the one day we went out and did a video shoot to kind of go over some of the features and whatnot. And that's the only time I've used the production card. It's not so much different than the one that I was testing, but there are little subtleties. So I haven't had a chance to really, put the new hotness through its paces. So it just really boils down to Dave did a lot of the work, because, not that there aren't other guys out there obviously beating the hell out of their carts. I know how hard he is on gear. I've seen it firsthand, and he's out in Bisonia when he's not working, he's out there fishing. So, and that's, you know, rough. It's rough terrain. It's not, not boat ramps. And as he says, this ain't no pavement princess.
Yeah. I struggle with breaking rods. So if Ketch ever gets into the rod making business, I'm buying some rods.
My Everest is to eventually make an American made reel, but I don't know. You know, I'm a St. Croix guy, and they make a really fine American made rod. So, I don't know that that's an arena that we're going to get into, and it's real hard to automate, or, you know, rod building is kind of like this little art unto itself. Yeah. You know, it's so durability on rods. I don't know. Stop slamming them in car doors, Brad.
It's always the stupidest way I break them, but
I've probably broken a half a dozen rods rolling down the back window and then rolling it up. Like, you just don't realize it just kind of pokes its way out, and then you just hear a crack. It's like,
I've broken more opening and walking through doors. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you get back, like, I'm going to actually bring everything in today. And you walk in carrying it, and then you're like, what was it? Door slammed real weird. And you look back, and all your rods are sticking out and half of them are broken. So,
yeah, I dropped the camera case and broke I broke six rods at St. Clair like 2 years ago. All like St. Croix legends too. You know, it wasn't nothing cheap. Yeah, two of them were musky rods too. So
that's why I won't buy. That's why I have a lot of trouble buying expensive rods. Like, if I buy them, it's because they're like severely discounted. Like, but I'm like, I've tossed in the water, you know, by accident. Like, I'm like, I can't bring myself to just go over the medium range, you know, and start dabbling in that high end range of rods and stuff. My track record from day one, Duke, of getting in a kayak, losing my favorite rod and reel combo at the time. And it was the first little expensive little setup I bought, you know. I mean, it wasn't crazy. It was like $300. First day in my kayak, knocked the shit off into the water, dude. Like, I'm like,
it took me, I've been kayak fishing for like, I don't know, since a little bit before 2010, like 2009-ish, 2008-ish. Not really seriously until 2011 or 2012, but it was just last year that I finally lost my first rod overboard. I've never lost one overboard. I always wondered why. How the hell are these guys losing all these damn rods overboard? And then, you know, I left the spinning reel, and it was just sitting over the paddle. And, you know, you get to you, when you got a pedal drive or a trolling motor, you end up pulling it up and, like, paddling in. So I pull the trolling motor up, and I go to grab the paddle. And, you know, my Stradic on a St. Croix Legends just sitting right underneath the blade, and it just goes dunk in like 7 feet of water. And me and Dusty sat there casting like A-rigs and treble hooks and like all sorts of stuff trying to pick it up. And, man, I was like, we did it for like we tried to get it for like 45 minutes or an hour. And I was like, you know what? It wasn't meant to be. So,
yeah.
I guess I've been fortunate to go this long without losing one overboard. Yeah. I've also never flipped a kayak either.
I haven't done that yet, knock on wood. But I remember one time, so this happened twice, and it was the same exact rod and reel setup. And it wasn't, like I said, after my first kayak fishing and the Coos HD and losing my favorite rod and reel, I decided that I wouldn't ever buy super high end, but I've kind of stayed in a little like low to mid range, you know, like I like lose reels, and I bought Fenwicks, and I kept buying Fenwicks because Cabela's had the Silverhawk, which was like an HMG, right? And it's like $99. It's got decent sensitivity. It lasts a while. I've had several of them. Well, they made a Silverhawk, which is just an HMG, and it was sold exclusively at Cabela's. Well, what was awesome was they would mark that thing down to $7.99 or $79. So I would go buy like five or six of them at a time. And I bought the Lose Tournament MB. It was only like $120. So both of them happened. I threw them in the water. Okay. Not in anger, but I would go to cast and my hands would be wet, right? From catching a fish. Both times happened immediately after catching a fish. Hands are wet,
go to cast, do something where my hand is clicking the reel on the handle at the same time as I'm casting, and I'm clicking basically everything shut again. And so it's like, and it just would whiplash out of my hand because my hands are wet. And the one time I did it, and it's like early spring, right? And it's only like 45, 50 degrees outside. The water's just at 35 to 40. And I look over, and it's been raining that day. And I look over, and my buddy starts like taking his clothes off. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? He's like, I'm going to go get that. I'm like, hell no, you're not, dude. Like, no. Stay in kayak. I don't need to call like search and rescue because you had cold water shock trying to fish out my $200 combo from this shitty lake.
So. Yeah. You hit the point of diminishing returns, I think, with rods around $200. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think up to about $200, you keep getting a better, more sensitive rod. And then, you know, and I've had some, you know, $400 and $500 rods, and they're nice and they're a little bit lighter, but is it putting more fish in the boat? Like, probably not. Like, it's more comfortable in your hand. Maybe it's got fancier Fuji guides on it or a better reel.
Durability is kind of where it gets like, you know, that's it. I will always say, if you're gaining more and more sensitivity, you start to kind of get in that range of where that that rod becomes fairly easier to break, you know?
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So, I mean, on simple stuff too, you know, like where you nick it from a weight hitting it or something, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the reels are the same way, you know, like around $200 or $250, you kind of get most of the technology and most of the advancements that are available. And then, you know, there's, you know, shit, you guys know there's $1,000 reels out there and, you know, is it that much better than the, you know, a $250 reel? No, you know, it's got nicer little anodized knobs on it and it might weigh 1.2 ounces less, but you know, like ultimately is that really, you know, is that going to put more fish in the boat, you know? So that's where my kind of budget price point is. I go to like, you know, $200 or $250 with a rod, you know, on the rod and the reel. And that's kind of where I'm.
Yeah.
When it gets to be much, I spend more than that on my musky stuff. Cause I'm a musky guy and musky stuff is just like it's bigger. So everything's like three times as expensive. So, but you know, other than that, on any of the bass stuff or any of my trolling rods, I use cheap stuff, like super cheap stuff, like, you know, 70, 80, you know, 60, 70, $80 reels. And I love, I found these Okuma cold waters this last season that are just, they're dynamite. They're like $100 or $105. So not cheap, but you know, ultimately not that expensive. So a lot of, you know, a lot of the stuff you see me dragging around nowadays, like, you know, it's like, I got like $150 into a combo and it does what I need it to do. I guess it all depends. You know, you want a little more sensitivity if you're flipping plastics or, you know, you might want that nice glass feel if you're, you know, dragging crankbaits or, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, for the most part, I'm kind of with you. I stick with the cheaper stuff. I go a little up market with some things, but, you know, a lot of it's just using cheaper stuff that I can beat on and not have to, I don't have to feel bad about crapping out $100 reel. If I get $3 out of it, I'm not tearing it apart to rebuild it. You know, that's it.
We're talking about like where we buy stuff that's, you know, more expensive, like the cart or the waders, but that's stuff I don't want to replace. You know what I mean? Or I don't want to replace my rods, but I found that the beating that they take just inadvertently, you know what I mean? Yep. Like, and I mean, Brad, I mean, you've had people, have you had anybody break one of your rods? You know, that's happened before, you know, it was somebody else's fault. And the last thing I'm going to do is look over at somebody and be like, that was, you know, $800, dude. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but it's, I guess you pick and choose those battles. And, you know, for the rods and reels, just, I know kayak anglers, especially because we work in such a confined area, all of our stuff always gets crammed in together. Yep. So,
It gets beaten up in rod tubes or the other place that everyone puts it. You set it in your pickup bed and it's got bed liner in it. And like, so all the side plates on all my bait casters are all rubbed to shit from like running around in the back of the pickup truck. And you know, I mean, you can only,
you know, you can only expect, I mean, quite frankly, as much as kayak anglers beat up their gear, I'm surprised a lot of the rods and reels last as long as they do. I think it's a testament to the quality, because if you did that 20 years ago with the, you know, G Loomis was kind of the hot setup way back when, and, you know, I wouldn't dream, I got a couple old Loomis rods that are for walleye fishing, and I wouldn't dare put them in the yeah. pickup bed or a rod tube or anything like that.
Yeah.
You kind of got to baby them, and they got sentimental value at this point. So I'm just trying to, you know, hold on to them as long as I can. But you just couldn't do that 20 years ago. The materials that they're building rods with nowadays is just, especially the reels too. I mean, I how smooth, like you can get a $70 or $80 reel that's buttery smooth.
Yep. Fluger.
Yeah, exactly. Get it. Yeah, exactly. Go get a President. $50. Yep. That is almost as good as a Shimano Stratic, or yeah. I don't know, what are they calling the new one? The Vanderhagen. Yeah.
What'd you say? The what?
Vanderhagen. I don't know what it's called. I just call it a Stratic because they didn't even really bother to design, like change the design. All they did was slap a different name on it. I think. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a real expert, but you know, Stratic was kind of what I grew up with. I own like the first ever Stratic from the early 90s. I still own it. I still fish with it. And so I guess, you know, when I'm in spinning gear, it's either a Shimano Stratic or I go with the Fluger stuff, because the Fluger stuff is, it's awesome. It's almost as good. And at $50, I can buy four of them for a Stratic. You know, so for trolling, like for walleye trolling and stuff, all my walleye trolling rods all have, you know, Flugers on them.
Yeah. And you got to save money anyways, because when you start buying those musky lures, man.
I don't use the big expensive musky lures. I'm a cheapskate when it comes to that. Oh, I hate that, man. That was like the whole swim bait, glide bait thing has really like missed the mark on me. I'm more of a mid-sized fisherman when it comes to musky stuff. And I use a lot of, I throw a lot of blades. I throw a lot of spinner baits. I don't rip rubber really. I'm either trolling, and I'm trolling mid-sized stuff like a 5-inch profile, maybe a 6-inch profile. I'm not out there trolling like a 12-inch Jake or, you know, stuff like that. I just didn't get into it. And I still don't get the bass guys that get into these, like the crazy, you see some of those custom painted bass swim baits are like $1,000. Like,
yeah.
It's worth more than the rod and reel you're throwing it on. How do you even chuck?
And just chuck that thing in the cover? Right. And then you're just like, all it takes is one bad cast and you hear that thing snap.
Oh, geez.
Watch it go.
So that's a Geno. Just gone. Bye bye.
I'm hoping done that before with like a $6 was
the floater right. version. Like, yeah, you got GPS installed on it to go track it down.
I'm cheap. A lot of the musky stuff I fish ends up being more upsized bass stuff. Not necessarily the musky stuff. And I'll throw cheap MEPS spinner baits for musky all day. And I don't need to go out and get the musky mayhem like $30 and $40 double cowgirls. I have some of them, but I've never really. I guess I've never really seen the benefit of that, of spending the money there. You know, if they prove themselves, don't get me wrong, I'm not a cheapskate. If it puts more fish in the boat, well, I'll spend the money every time. But you got to prove it to me before I'm gonna lay down the money every time. You know, I still don't like to buy jackhammers, even though all these anglers that are way better than me tell me, oh man, you can't be using the original chatterbait. The jackhammer's so much better. And it's like, man, I just can't get myself to pay $16-17 for something that they sell for $5 in the original version. Like,
that's how Brad was forever, dude. He held out, and he still sort of holds out. He's bought a couple here.
I have one jackhammer.
And, he's like,
I've owned a couple.
It's probably still in the box.
I've owned a couple of them, but I've never, you know, I get what people say, you know, it thumps a little quicker. But I've always kind of been the guy who casts it out, and my first move with the chatterbait is always kind of a rip. So
yeah, me too.
As long as you rip it to get it thumping, it stays thumping, you know. Yeah. And you can slow roll it still. Like I know there's
The tone's different, dude. Bro,
seriously, you got to get like that Miles Davis, like John Coltrane shit going on.
Oh, that's funny.
All right, man. Anything else you want to add?
No, man, just I appreciate being on the show. I love what you guys are doing, and I'm glad to see Paddle and Finn enter in year three, I think, right? Or year four?
Yeah. Yep.
Something like that. I lost track.
We're going to be coming into year four.
Nice.
Next year. So, yeah, dude, it's been a ride, and you've been a part of it, man. You've been a big part of it, and we appreciate you taking time to come talk to us again.
Yeah, I appreciate being on the show, guys. Stuff like this is great. It's great to get product awareness out there. It's great to just have some candid conversations with other anglers and chop it up a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it's good talking to you. We haven't talked to you in a while. And everybody, be on lookout for the catch cart coming.
In the crate.
The crate, too, yeah. That's going
to
be
interesting. Have you on again next year?
Yeah, I'm hoping to have that out, like, hopefully by July. That's the... So we just purchased the water jet to cut all the panels, the custom panels for them. It's just a matter of getting the extrusion. We've built prototypes and tested them, and it's slick, man. I don't mean to float my own boat, but for once, I'm not going to be fighting upstream on being the most expensive guy. It's going to be like the same price as an H Crater or a Black Pack or a nice. Yak Gadget, Yak Gadget. Crate. So for once I won't be fighting uphill with the market, and it's already got integrated. You saw with the extrusion on the cart, our crate is actually made with all the extrusion profiles that put it together all have integrated T-slot in them. So it becomes a lot easier to mount accessories and whatnot. So I think that product is like really a home run.
Okay.
Nice. Can't wait to see it.
All right, Brad, anything else, bud?
Nope, man. Good show. It was fun.
All right, Duke. Well, thanks again for joining us. Everybody, thanks again for listening, and catch us next week. See ya.
Been real, fellas.
See ya.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Abyss Battery, Waypoint TV.